Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 15 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Jimmy Moyo, we're going to touch on Telkom. You know what was missing from that? No mention of SwiftNet. Man, I want SwiftNet to list. Adrian Saville talking the rate decision later today. Do we need to do a Paul Flocker and pretty much just raise rates by 1% this evening? Keith Lockwood on the Ultron FinTech Short-Term Credit Impact Index. It's showing a continued but slow improvement. I want to dig into that. It gives us a sense of how consumers are, I suppose, at the core and their ability to borrow money. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Trading data shows SA investors are not panicking yet. Increase in trading volumes to above that seen in March 2020 went largely unnoticed. Indeed, it did. It's a great read. Business day, business confidence falls to lowest in almost 2 years. Lower import and export volumes drag down the SACI Business Confidence Index for May. Morning markets, US was mixed overnight. S&P down 0.4, NASDAQ up 0.2%. Asia is red, Sydney off 0.4, Turkey are down 0.75%. Commodities mostly red, gold, $1,817 an ounce. Brent, $121.07 a barrel. Platinum, $922. Palladium, the only green, $1,834. Rand, $15.98. Top 40, looking for a 30-point red open. That's a 0.05%. That is 10 cent trades up 0.8% in Hong Kong, and Bitcoin, $21,600.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Moyaha, independent analyst, talking those Telkom numbers. Jimmy, I thought a couple of points stood out for me. One was a chunky dividend, 330. Add that to the interim of $1.70. It's R5 for the year. But the market didn't much like the results. But then, truthfully, it was a sort of day where the market didn't really like anything.
Morning, Simon. I'm inclined to agree with you. The market's just at the moment very, very picky about the sort of information it wants to digest as positive and react positively towards that. We saw Telkom's HEPS was up, revenue was flat, but I mean their bottom line was improved. They managed to increase their decrease their operating expenditure actually by about 4%. So I think the sense that the numbers that Telkom reported weren't the worst numbers, and given where we're sitting from an economic standpoint, both locally and globally, I think the market might have been a bit too harsh on Telkom, given that revenue only declined by about a percent overall.
Yeah, and that's certainly my sense. SwiftNet, which is their towers and mast business, which they were going to list earlier this year and then said, no, market conditions. I searched that document. I couldn't see any mention of it at all.
Yeah, no. Didn't see any mention of it either. But I also think it might be for the best at the moment to hold off on that listing, just given where we're sitting globally. I mean, you don't want to. I mean, Telkom share was down almost 10% yesterday alone. Mm-hmm. And in the current economic climate, you don't want to be unbundling to say you're unlocking value when you don't even know what's going to happen the following day in the afternoon. I mean, we've got a Fed decision this afternoon. We've got Bank of England on Thursday. Thursday. And then we've got Bank of Japan on Friday. So really, you don't want to be promising investors that this is where it turns around. This is where the bottom is that we've picked out and we're going to give you more value when you've got so many uncertainties, both locally and internationally.
You mentioned the uncertainties, the markets. Most folks I'm chatting to in the market at this point are saying this market is wild, tons of unknowns. You mentioned Japan, you mentioned Bank of England, of course, the Federal Reserve later tonight. And that, frankly, at this point, holding cash is king. I mean, you're not panicking and selling everything, but buying is perhaps maybe not the right move right at this point.
Absolutely. I mean, you'd think that things like gold would be The traditional safe haven, but even that's not performing in the direction that you'd think it would. You've got a lot of eyes on the dollar and what the Fed is going to be doing. Are they going to get it right? Are they finally going to be able to say that they've managed to cap inflation, curb its rise, or are we going to find ourselves in a situation where, regardless of the decision they make, we're going to stagflation in Europe, stagflation in the US, and emerging markets are required to sort of outperform developed markets on certain areas where they wouldn't originally or ordinarily. But you've also got China that's sitting quietly in their corner. And we know from what we've seen in the past, China could very well come out and still have really good growth relative to the rest of the world. So I think the market at the moment and the volatility and the uncertainty that we're seeing from an investor level is definitely something where people are very happy to just sit on their hands, limit their losses. I mean, you've got guys like MicroStrategy who are so heavily weighted on Bitcoin coming out to say that they can weather the volatility. But in reality, I mean, they're holding 129,000 Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's at $22,000 again. So there's a lot happening. There's a lot happening right now in the market. So.
There is a ton happening, and Thursday's a holiday, tomorrow's a holiday, maybe that's a good thing, we can all take a day off. And correction to myself, no dividend from Telkom. I don't know where I got that in my notes when I was doing it yesterday, but no dividend coming through from Telkom. We'll leave it there. To me, Mario, independent analyst, appreciate the early morning time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Turning now with Dr. Adrian Savoy, Genera Capital. Adrian, appreciate the early morning time. Interest rates in the US, a decision from the FOMC later today. I was pondering back. Initially, it was going to be, I mean, I remember when the dot plots came out last year and suddenly interest rates were looking to happen in 2023. Then they were this year. They were 25 points. Then it was 50 points in the last meeting. Now talk today about maybe 75 points. Is it not time for the Fed? And we've talked about how far behind the curve they are, to almost do a Paul Flocker and do a full 1% and really aggressively tackle the inflation.
Yeah, you know, I remember our conversation, and, you know, forgive me for not having the exact date, but perhaps 7-8 months back,
yeah,
where we were talking about the origins of inflation and, you know, whether it could truly be as entrenched as it appears. And, it seems to be coming to pass. You know, there's some forecasts or predictions you don't want to come right. And you know, sadly, the one that you don't want to come right is the one that comes right. So here we are with very elevated inflation that looks like it's set to stay. And, you know, why would a Volcker moment be needed where the Fed steps in and essentially shocks Wall Street and Main Street into the reality that the inflation is entrenched? You know, why is that needed? And I think it's because inflation has moved from being a monetary phenomenon to a phenomenon of the mind, that it's moving into the psyche.
Yeah.
And that's where you start to get expectations and wage negotiations and agreements based on, I believe that this inflation is here to stay, and it's nonsense to negotiate on 2%, I'm negotiating on 8%.
Yeah, and it does become that, we've spoken around it, that expectation in it. And part of the reason why the Fed has been treading more carefully is they're trying to negotiate a soft landing. I mean, I would imagine, is a soft landing almost off the table? Or, I mean, either we get a soft landing and we keep that inflation, which is not desirable, or we sort of start to tame inflation, but we probably get a hard landing.
Yeah, you know, so having poked a bit of fun at our inability to forecast,
yeah, yeah.
here's a forecast that I'd like to get right, you know, that we are in for a soft landing. That is, the odds are stacked against my wish and the Fed's ambition. Because if you take the last 70 years, there is no time when the Fed has been able to get inflation from above 5% to below 5% without inflation, without recession following. There's no instance when that has been done. So that if we take that as the default, you know, then the question really becomes, you know, how deep and how long is the recession, rather than, you know, will there be a recession? And even if there isn't recession, you know, perhaps we can just pull a little bit away from the obsession with, you know, negative equals recession, and, you know, just recognize that whether it's negative or very, very low, the near future is going to be a period of much, much slower economic growth, or perhaps economic contraction, than we've been used to, and that requires a different investment stance.
Yeah, that's a great point. Recession's a technical term. It's going to be tough with or without it, and that really matters. I was actually just trying to dig through, and I'm having to do this by manually because I don't have the raw data. It looks like the last time the Fed did a increase of more than 0.5% was 1994, which was under the days of Bill Clinton. And I don't remember 94 being that bad, but obviously the then Fed Reserve did. A last question, Adrian. The one thing that I've then been pondering, so let's say that, you know, the rates in the Fed in the US are going higher, whether he goes massively aggressive or not, the point is they're moving higher for the first time in decades. We're going to see this in the Treasury bills. And it suddenly occurred to me, if you can suddenly start getting, I don't know, 6%, maybe 7 or 8%, I know this sounds crazy, in the US in a Treasury bill, that's bad news for us, because suddenly no one wants to buy our bonds, so our bonds get more expensive and our rand goes weaker at the same time as everyone rushes off to buy American debt.
And you saw that on Friday afternoon where the rand responded quite vigorously to the shock news of the higher than expected inflation in the US when they printed 8.6. That means US rates, you know, are likely to go up 75 basis points, not 50. And that makes the rand, all else equal, a little less attractive. And so the rand moved from, I think it was, you know, 1530 territory to 1519, and is now above 16 on the back of that news. We're a long way off still from the Fed being in 6 or 7 territory. That said, the Taylor rule wants U.S. interest rates at 6 or 7%. A third, however, in that statement is, however, you know, if you look at the forward, the forwards on inflation predictions, the data says that the U.S. is going to be able to get sub 5 without getting interest rates all the way up there, and so it might not be as dramatic as a 6 or 7%. Yield in the U.S., but it's going in that direction. And you know, my strong suspicion is we get 75 of that that hike later today.
Yeah, I think it's 75. I think you should do 1%, but I'm not the one who earns the big bucks here, so we'll stick with the 75. Dr. Adrian Saville, Genuia Capital. Adrian, always appreciate your insights. Thank you.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Jenny now with Keith Lockwood. We're talking the Altron FinTech Short-Term Credit Impact Index. Keith, appreciate the time this morning. The report hit my inbox yesterday afternoon. It's looking at last quarter of last year, but also giving glimpses into Q1 of this year. And the one point that you made that I hadn't really thought of, but really stood out for me, is that you make, you know, significantly fewer people earning a regular salary every month, and therefore implications for number of people who would be considered creditworthy.
Yes, Simon, I think that it also surprised me a little bit when you look at some of the qualitative issues around employment. So, although we have in total close to 2 million more unemployed people, we've still got about 9% of the way to go to get back to pre-COVID levels in terms of total employment. But even if you look below the surface of that, you'll see that there have been some qualitative changes. So unpaid household workers, that's essentially people who work in a household without getting rewarded for that, or maybe rewarded in kind in terms of accommodation and stuff like that. That increased by 70% from pre-COVID levels.
Yeah.
But when you look then at the people who are actually employed by someone else, that dropped quite significantly. That's down about 10%. And then the number of employers in the economy also dropped by 12%. So just from that perspective alone, you can see that even with the additional the reduction in the number of people employed, those that are still technically qualified or classified as being employed, there's some people there that wouldn't be regarded as creditworthy anyway because they're simply not earning income.
And in which case the lenders are just not a conversation they're happy to have. Adjusting for seasonality, there was a slight uptick in credit extension overall, and sort of moving in the direction and suggesting to me, and notwithstanding the we're still below pandemic levels, there has been, I mean, we saw employment locally in South Africa for Q1 sort of ticking in the right direction, but my sense is banks are still, lenders are still being careful.
Yeah, and I think that's particularly true in the short-term credit market because, remember, short-term credit is essentially extended by individuals or organizations with their own capital, so they don't have depositors whose funds they can lend out. So they have to be really careful about how they choose to extend credit. But they do often have the advantage that they're working and they're located in communities. So they have the ability to assess people's income levels in ways that banks wouldn't typically be able to do.
That's a great point. And I remember chatting with Cop Agri recently, and of course they do credit lending, but they do it within community, and I was chatting with also Reg Causa recently, and it's that almost, I mean, it's not micro, but it's taking the lending to the old school way of thinking about it, where you actually know the person and their circumstance perhaps better than a traditional a bank manager.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, it's going to be a challenge for traditional credit providers anyway, because as we move into this sort of fourth industrial revolution, you're probably going to find more and more people have multiple jobs and there'll be less formal employment opportunities with regular monthly income. So the way we assess people's capacity to service loans will clearly have to change under those circumstances. And in that sense, I guess these people have the edge on traditional lenders who tend to rely very much on formal payslips and things like that.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that as sort of the idea of a single traditional job sort of works its way. Keith Lockwood, the index author of the Ultron FinTech Short-Term Credit Impact Index. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We're chatting with Petli Radenhurst yesterday around just how tough it is in these volatile markets and how tough trading is. Trading is distinct from investing. We asked you how your trading has done so far in 2022 on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. Almost half of you say, I just don't trade. That's cool. That's perfect. Just stick to the long-term investing. That's certainly easier. About a quarter each of you saying, no, it's either been a horror or you're managing to hold on, with a small amount saying that actually you're doing well and truthfully. Surprisingly well, and kudos to that small minority if you're managing to eke out good returns from this crazy volatile year. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Nicole Tetetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. No show tomorrow. We have recorded a show for Friday, and we're going to be chatting China and NASDAQ big tech.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.